Il-program li ser tisimaw u għamidju plilkom bi xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
This is Patricia Camilleri, welcoming you to University Matters on Campus FM. In this series, together, we shall continue to discover more about the work of the university's academics and about the many activities that will be taking place on campus over the next year. I'm very happy to have with me today Dr. Darlene Clover. Dr. Clover is a professor in the Faculty of Education, the University of Victoria, British Columbia in Canada. Just a few words about her activities and her background. Her areas of teaching include women's community, cultural and ecological leadership and activism, feminist environmental adult and art-based adult education, and research methods. In addition to her academic work, Dr. Clover facilitates community workshop and undertakes participatory research projects with various women's organizations. Dr. Clover's current research explores the adult education philosophies and practices of women working in art galleries and museums in Canada and UK, and how they are reconceptualizing and recontextualizing this work to tackle some of society's more pressing contemporary issues. Dr. Clover has co-edited a number of special editions of academic journals on the arts and also art and cultural institutions. Her most recent books include Aesthetic Practice and Adult Education, that was 2013, and Lifelong Learning, the Arts and Creative Cultural Engagement in the Contemporary University, International Perspectives, also 2013. She's currently co-editing a volume entitled Women, Adult Education, and Leadership in Canada. Welcome to the program, Dr. Clover.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think it's clear from your bio that you have a great interest in social issues. Can you tell us a little bit about your civil society background and what inspired you to take an interest in community study?
When I returned from living abroad, I've been living in Latin America for many years, and when I returned to Canada, I began to work for an organization called the International Council for Adult Education, and this was one of Canada's largest non-governmental organizations. And the focus of that organization was on adult education as a tool for social change. So their emphasis was on how we use education to address, to work with people to address specific kinds of issues. And the programs that they had were women, of course, so an emphasis on women and women's education for empowerment and emancipation, on peace, peace studies at the time, human rights, adult literacy, of course, was another issue. And more recently, around 1992, the environment came into being, because this organization had a special status with UNESCO, the United Nations Scientific, Cultural and Educational Organization in Paris. And they were organizing the what was popularly known as the Earth Summit. And what we wanted to do at that time was to show the links between environmental degradation and environmental problems and issues around women, around peace, around poverty, around violence, injustice, and therefore bring them all together rather than leaving the environment to be something about, as one person said to me once, trees. So our aim was to show the multifaceted ideas of the injustice of the environment. And of course, the struggle was to try to align environmental issues with human rights issues so that you had the legal right to clean air and water. But of course, the failure was that the environment was aligned with trade and economic resource.
Yes, these are problems, or shall we say challenges, that we've been hearing about for so many years, and yet it's very difficult to mark out headways. I'm sure much headway has been made along the line, but the challenges seem to be always there and repeating themselves perhaps, or really not improving as much as one would like.
Yes, I would agree with that. On the one hand, I would agree very much with that. And I think we have a global paradigm that does not recognize that it is part of the problem, or it is the problem. And the perpetuation of activities as they are of the status quo is simply not going to work, and we've seen that over and over and over again. However, I also believe that in some cases much headway has been made in different areas. We have not blown the planet apart, yet we have the capacity to do it. And I think, therefore, that there's a lot to be said for peace activists and people who have tried to prevent massive destruction. And yet, of course, we have wars and different problems. So I think in some senses, yes, and in other ways, no. And the local actions that people take do make a difference in the day-to-day lives of people. It's the, when you look at it at a planetary, and from a planetary perspective, yes, it may look like we are falling far behind. And of course, there are always backlashes to different things as well. There's a feminist backlash, I would argue, very strongly at the moment. And there's also becoming an environmental backlash. And some of it has to do with greed and avarice. A lot of it has to do with fear. People believe that if someone gains something that someone else has to lose. And of course, if you put it into winner and loser perspective, then there will be a fear. But it isn't, if we reduce poverty and we empower women, it doesn't mean that we cause injustice on the other side, or that it's a win-win situation for everyone, but it is dichotomously set up as a problem, as there's only so much to go around, just like conversations about economics. There is no money to do this. And yet, if we want to host a war or an Olympic Games, there's always money. So there is money. It's not a lack of money. It's a lack of where those resources go.
Perhaps in the area of environment, one can see that there's definitely a greater awareness of the importance. Even in Malta, I can remember perhaps 20 years ago, the environment was not really on the agenda. Whereas down the line, it has now become much more a subject which people talk about and discuss, and very much part. Also, the politicians have started talking about it, which of course shows that it has become an agenda, an item in general on people's agendas.
It has a line item. It's a line item now, and never was before. When I began in 1992, there was no real interest or understanding in it at all, but it's a line item now, yes. Although whether that's good or bad in some instances, is the way in which it's tackled is completely different. And that's where the fun and the challenge comes in, because people are aware, but their response to how we should deal with it is what is completely different. And that's where the interesting part of adult education comes in, and working with people whose ideas are quite different.
Community is a big word. It covers myriad groups of people. Give us a bit of a feel about what that word community really can mean.
I think it is. It's an ambiguous space. It's non-static. It's messy. It's confrontational. But it is a site where you can begin with where people are at, as we say in adult education. It's a space in which you can begin to tackle some of the problems and make the local connections, never expecting that things will be easy, or that communities are homogeneous, that ideas will all be the same. But it is a space in which you can begin a dialogue and a conversation about a world that could be different, or the way in which we could work together to make change. So community to me is never a simple site. It is not a romantic space in any way, but it is a concrete and a real site to begin to talk about making this world a different and better place.
It's become a bit of a cliche to say that we live in a globalized society. How does that, though, affect communities? Scholar called Guylen has written about glocal groups. Do these exist? If so, how do they work?
Yes, well, let's go back to the environment, I think, because then that's an important one, because one of the areas of particular interest to me has been working with women in the arts. women who are using arts as an educational and a political tool. And if we look at the ways in which some of these community organizations are tackling these ideas, in one particular instance on the island, I live on the small island of Vancouver Island. Well, it's probably about 10 times the size of Malta, but when in Canada, it's a small space. And these women decided they were going to put in a gas-fired power plant into the community. And the women did not want that. And a number of people did not want it. There was a whole series of organizing going on locally to try to combat that plant. But there was very much an understanding of the way in which the impact that that plant would have, not just on the local community, because some of the impact could have been good, such as employment, but in terms of air pollution and air pollution knowing no boundaries, and so making a contribution to the problem that causes climate change for the planet. So the essence was to stop the local plant. The idea was the larger picture was an understanding of the impact that that plant would have on climate change. So you can say, well, that's a microcosm of all of this. But once you have hundreds of these plants, then you're making a different kind of a contribution. So that's, I think, an example of both a local and a global understanding of the impact of something.
Lifelong learning as well has become quite a buzzword. The European Commission, they're very keen on it, and it's emphasized in documents, in projects, and here in Malta, we're very keen on lifelong learning. Even here at the university, we have a lot of projects which work towards lifelong learning. You've been closely involved in adult education. Do you think that it really is making a contribution to making that world better, that these people's lives also are improving because of adult education?
I think adult education and lifelong learning may in some ways be the same and may in some ways be very different. And so it depends on the take that you have on these. Unfortunately, for the concept of lifelong learning, when you first think about it meant understanding that learning happens from cradle to grave, and therefore it was a wonderful thing because it finally realized that not only children learned and learned in school, but that everyone learned, and that learning was something that was natural and human and should be supported, acknowledged and supported. Unfortunately, the discourse has been taken up somewhat by governments to mean sort of living in a perpetual mode of learning for how to get a job and learning for the market. And therefore, the blame, if you do not find employment, then the blame lies on you for not having engaged enough in education and learning. And adult education can somehow be caught up in that, but the kind of adult education that I'm work in, the discourse in which I'm placed, is primarily around education as a space of encounter, a space of dialogue, and a space for social change and to talk about social issues rather than talking about how to get a job and how to write a resume. Those are very different kinds of ideas. And so the space in which I inhabit and the courses that I teach is, how do we work with these non-static, non-homogeneous, very messy, very complicated communities to think about the world differently and to try to bring that into being and create within people some sense of agency that they do have a right to speak out, they have a right to make the world the way they want to see it, and they have a right to argue that into being.
I'm personally interested in museums and their place in communities. You've also written about community museums and how museums can fit into the community space, as you say. What made you move from one to the other, or is there this link?
It was an interesting continuum because my research was predominantly on women. And I say women simply, it is not that there are not men working in this area. There are many, but when it came down to the very hard work, it just seemed to me that I was running into a lot of women. So women were using these creative practices such as collective quilting, mural making, women artists coming together with communities, what I call community-based artists. And I was interested in them because their area was adult education, using the arts as the educational tool, the medium around which we create dialogue around racism, violence against women, homophobia, whatever the issues were. They were very, very powerful women, very powerful artworks. They were radical. They were progressive. They were about social change. They were dynamic. It was absolutely astounding, and I found myself caught up in a world of policy, of censorship, when they would have some artworks that would depict things that government simply did not like, they would move in and try to whitewash them, and it was this wild and radical and magical world of change, of women who passionately cared and used their art. Passionately. Occasionally during the research, and it became more frequent, some of the women would say to me, well, if you think this is interesting, you should speak with such and such at the National Gallery in Ottawa. And I would think, I have no interest whatsoever in speaking. I don't care about dust and antiquity and static spaces of, you know, gloom and majesty and all of those stereotypes that we have, some of which are true, of museums and art galleries. And finally, it became so frequent that they kept saying that to me that I thought, fine, I'll go. And I went one day, I made an appointment with the woman who worked at the National Gallery of Ottawa, which is Canada's National Gallery. And I walked into her space, and she had worked with a number of different community organizations, youth groups, and people to create works of art, but also to use the museum as a platform to talk about the dismantling of human rights. The way in which the surveillance society and how we were, because of 9/11, we were, due to, you know, fear, ignorance, and economics, we were losing our rights. And she wanted people to begin to fight back about the way in which we were being, we were no longer able to take risks in our lives. Risks are very important. You want to live with a certain amount of risk in your life. You don't want a surveillance society. You don't want to lose the rights that people fought so hard to have in a country like Canada. And so she was actually using this space, the artworks themselves, the master's works, as well as creating their own artwork. And I was astounded because I never expected to find anything like that. So I thought, was this a mistake? Was this one person doing this? So I set out to start to look at other spaces of major art galleries and museums to see how they were tackling these issues, these are extremely traditional spaces. They are very government controlled, many of them, because they're publicly funded. There are many reasons why these institutions, like universities, should not be doing what it is that they are doing in terms of trying to be socially responsible and responsive. But they are, and they are using education as that practice. And I would say with a great deal of skill and nothing, no less than courage. In the face of what it is they are up against, it is very courageous what many of these men, but again, predominantly women that I'm finding are doing.
Well, it was wonderful that you found the director or curator of a museum who had the imagination and the flair and the courage, as you say, to actually stick her neck out.
Heads above the parapet.
Quite so. Because that was actually in an institution that had a rather 19th century sort of ethos about it or feeling about it, and yet she managed to do that. They have been neglected sites of it, of adult education. The potential is there, but they just haven't been doing it.
Well, for adult education, the reason I believe that they have not been taken up in the discourse or are not seen as sites of adult education is because of their elitist, exclusionary, patronizing, homophobic, sexist. There are a number of different qualities and traits and characteristics to these institutions. that linger. And I, because adult education, or the kind of education that I'm talking about right now, has been focused on working with marginalized populations, with social justice and social change, these were seen as the problem. They were part of the elitist establishment that caused the problems in the first place. They were classist. Their practice of education was to allow, there was a quotation in an article that I was reading in Canada, that people would be allowed in if they had clean hands and did not speak a coarse jargon. And they would be frog-marched through the exhibits, and what Hooper Greenfield called it regimented walking. And they would be told what to think. So they were not spaces that were seen as emancipatory, as empowering, as progressive, as interesting. And that may have been true. However, I have uncovered I'm making a presentation on Saturday at the conference that I'm here to show that, in essence, there was always a belief of a social purpose. Now, whether that was a messy purpose and a little slightly patronizing and problematic, there has always been something there that they have believed about themselves, and there have always been the cracks in elitism and those who believed that this was a site that could make a difference in the world. And they're being called upon now by governments, which can be problematic, scholars, you in your own interest in the area and readings. They're being called upon and pressured to use their resources, to use their might, to use their sites, to be more socially responsible and responsive. And the pressure is on for them to do that. And I think that there is a seed there that they can build on. And one was that, particularly in the so-called New World, where I'm from Canada, of course you've got to remember that the Aboriginal peoples were there for thousands of years, so it's hardly new. But with the rise of the New World, many governments came in, and they were very populist governments, and they were very much pushing a sort of a conservative agenda of development and the market and all of the kinds of things that we see today. That, the essence of that, and many people saw these sites as a way, one man called it a devotion to something other than money and material things, to a spiritual essence, to a world that was different from the market and from the everyday. So problematic in some ways, those statements, but something to build on, I believe, because the essence has always been there. So what I'm going to argue is that what we're seeing now is somewhat of a natural progression. And I'm also going to show how there are problematic notions in adult education that these institutions share. So they're not so different, and we should not be ignoring them, because they are heads above the parapet, and they are being very courageous. Not all, but there are some instances of taking on issues that I think that even adult educators shy away from. And so we need to be supporting these, particularly women, because the educators are usually women. Curators are often more men, but the educators are almost all women. And I found that out by doing the research. I think they need some support and recognition for what it is that they're doing.
You can go on talking about, you know, top-down and arrogance and philanthropy of a certain type in these 19th century museums. But one thing is, as you say, there's a sort of a seed of it, the appreciation of an aesthetic that can make life nicer, better. Mm-hmm. They may have expressed it badly, but that seed of art with a big A, whatever it is, being something incredibly important, that seed has sort of trickled down over the years.
They've always valued the human aesthetic dimension. So whether that was problematically done by only men's arts or whatever it was, there was always an essence to them about a valuing of something bigger than ourselves or different from ourselves, or creativity, the imagination. It's something that they have managed to carry that I think that maybe perhaps Adult education, the arts and adult education, the area that I'm interested in, is growing now in leaps and bounds, but it was never much of the discourse in the beginning. And so these institutions, I suggest, can offer a lot for their uncompromising belief in the power and potential of art and culture in our lives.
Well, in the half a minute we have left, I'd just like to mention the community museums, because we've talked about the changes taking place perhaps in the more traditional ones, but there are this wonderful collection of community museums and eco museums and this kind of thing. Difficult to define, but I think a wonderful space as well.
Yes, because their whole essence is on the local and the representation of the local and becoming a space for the local. The interesting thing that I'm noticing in particularly in around these smaller museums is that they even bought into a discourse that's really important to these institutions, is the discourse of neutrality. And that is that you take a balanced position, you do not take a stand. One of the things that I'm noticing about the smaller museums, and I'll speak specifically of Canada right now, is that they are deciding that they want to be what they call agents of change, and they are no longer interested in neutrality. Neutrality is simply to support the status quo. It is not neutral. There is no neutrality in neutrality. So a number of the museums in Canada's right now we have the oil sands, which you've probably heard of, which are an environmental pariah on the planet. And the idea is to send a pipeline from an inner province all the way to the coast through some of the most hostile environments in terms of trying to put some human-made thing that would be very fragile and would therefore leak, but over salmon spawning grounds, through Aboriginal territory, out to a coastline that is one of the most rugged on the planet, with shoals and islands and massive waves crashing in, to try to bring super tankers in to pick up the oil. So by the time the grizzly bears and the mountains and the snow and the ice were finished with that pipeline, then the super tankers would be smashed up against the shore. So it's all a very ugly picture. And the museum decided to have conversations that moved us away from the yes and the no of the pipeline, to really talk about these bigger issues of the planet and the environment, and to really take a stand against the pipeline. And the pipeline has been defeated in the area, and they can pride themselves on having played a very interesting role in that.
Well, thank you very, very much, Dr. Darlene Clover, for coming on University Matters on Campus FM today to talk about adult education, about community museums, and other interesting subjects. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
This is Patricia Camilleri welcoming you to University Matters on Campus FM. In this series, together, we shall continue to discover more about the work of the university's academics and about the many activities that will be taking place on campus over the next year.
Il program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġu plilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.